since 1976. We import more than 3 million gallons of gasoline already refined on a daily basis. There's a refinery in Arizona, for example, they've been trying to get up and running, which has been blocked by all kinds of environmental lawsuits. We have not built any what are called LNG, liquefied natural gas terminals. Environmental groups have tried to stop offshore drilling. The Gulf of Mexico is sitting on 232 trillion feet of natural gas. That's an estimate, not to mention 37 billion barrels of oil. Isn't it fun to say that's like Carl Sagan, billions and billions? Alaska's got another 22 trillion cubic feet of gas, 25 billion barrels of oil. So just in natural gas alone, if all of these reserves were combined, we'd be looking at about 400 trillion cubic feet. That would last the U.S. for about 20 years in terms of natural gas production, assuming consumption stays where it is. But we are preventing people from gaining access to it. Zoom out. There are more than 2 billion more people on the planet than there were 30 years ago. There are upcoming countries such as China and India that are now competing with the U.S. for energy. The population in the U.S. has grown. And once again, starting in the 1990s, we began building more gas-guzzling cars like SUVs and, after Desert Storm, Humvees, and gigantic RVs, which are consuming more oil. We have done nothing to increase the energy infrastructure. Indeed, we have actually opposed it, and as a result, it has gone into neglect. Now, this is not because the oil industry has not wanted to try to get at these resources, but we have a gross imbalance between supply and demand, and a massive imbalance in reasonability between radical environmental regulation and laws and economic laws, which would allow...
The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Welcome to tonight's edition of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Game Show. I'm Michael Shaw, and we're going to have a very special first hour here tonight. Second hour, Roy Avila will be at the hostess, and that'll be an interesting show with Shu Bartholomew on homeowner associations. But here in our first hour on this beautiful evening on the central coast of California, we're going to talk with Charlotte Iserbeet. Now, Charlotte is a former senior policy advisor in the United States Department of Education. She blew the whistle in the 1980s on government activities that were withheld from the public. Her inside knowledge will help you protect your children from controversial methods and programs. She's the author of The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. The Washington Times reported after she wrote that book the following. Charlotte Iserbeet's Deliberate Dumbing Down of America is without doubt one of the most important publishing events in the annals of American education in the last 100 years. John Dewey's book, School and Society, published in 1899, set American education on its course to socialism. 56 years later, the book Why Johnny Can't Read, published in 1955, informed American parents that there was something terribly wrong with the way schools were teaching children to read. Well, Isabite, reports the newspaper, has done what no one else wanted or could do. She has put together the most formidable and practical compilation of documentation describing the well-planned, deliberate dumbing down of American children by their educational system. Tonight we're going to talk about that in the context of what's really happening in America today, and there's nothing more important and more nerve-shattering than what's happening with our children and how they are being deliberately dumbed down. So, our guest tonight, Charlotte Iserbeet, and Charlotte, it is so wonderful to welcome you to our audience this evening.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to the interview, and I hope that we'll be able to help the audience understand primarily how it is the dumbing down has been deliberate.
Well, that's
so important.
That's
so important.
A real key, because so many people think that things are just naturally occurring in our society today, but in fact that isn't the case, and it really does start with devolving the nature of the human experience, and no better way to do that than if you can grab control of all the young people at an early age and begin to mark them for a changed world.
That's right. And
tell us to start with, just what is it that that our educational system is really searching for at its core level?
Well, it's been searching for over 100 years, right? And the goal has been for over 100 years to change it from an academic system that it was geared towards the individual child's upward mobility, giving them an understanding of the world around them and strong basis in math and science and literature and history and art, music, etc., so that they would be able to go out into the world and do what they themselves wanted to do, which in most cases is very beneficial towards society when an individual has that freedom and are able to do it. They changed it from that system, from the academic system, to a workforce training system, basically, a social engineering system, where the child is nothing more nor less than a tool of the state to bring about the goals of the state. Mm-hmm. Not has nothing to do with the upward mobility of the child. And in order to do that, they had to change education from academics to basically performance-based, behavior-oriented brainwashing. And all of this is documented in my book, and I always point out that they could never have done this. It's diabolical how cleverly it's been done. You can't really blame the American people. We like to blame them for being asleep at the switch, but pretty difficult to be asleep at the switch or to be awake over a period of 100 years. This has been very gradual, like the frog, the frog in the cold water. You heat the water up gradually and the frog's finally dead. Well, when it's done gradually, as it has been done, and when it's been done deceptively by using, I call it semantic deception, using terms that mean one thing to us, like basic skills means reading, writing, and arithmetic to us, and basic skills to them is brainwashing. And the basic skills would be teach them that the world is changing and the Constitution is evolving and we've got to be global citizens and blah, blah, blah. Their own definition of basic is very different from ours. And then you have the dialectic, which is very simple. It's a word that sounds complicated, but it's not. The dialectic is very simple. You first of all, if you want something, the government change agents, the people on top, the UN, whatever, in education, you have to create the problem first, and then you get people to scream. I mean, sort of like with whole language. It's a good example. Create the problem with reading, with whole language, the most ridiculous way to teach reading that the world ever could possibly conceive, where you really don't teach them grammar, you don't teach them spelling or anything. They just imagine how to spell a word, and your audience certainly, most of them probably have gone through that. But you create such a problem that people scream, and they'll accept any method to teach reading. And of course they're going to accept it if it's labeled phonics. And maybe it is using phonics to a certain extent, but it's phony phonics. It's animal training phonics. And so that's how they got their workforce training in, by putting the Skinner dog training method into the reading method. So that's the dialectic there. And then you have big bucks, massive amounts of money, and you also have the media with you. I call it the five-prong fork. And that's basically how they did it. Semantic deception, the dialectic, gradualism, big bucks, and the media. Hmm. Well, it would be pretty difficult not to succeed if you use that five-prong, I call it five-prong, devil's fork. And they've succeeded. They've taken us. They've lied. They've taken our money. They've used the dialectic very successfully, etc. So my book goes through this chronologically. It's arranged chronologically so that people can't really say that I took 1913 or whatever and placed it up with 2005 and made my case that way. I mean, I can do that. It's very easy to do that, and it makes sense. But it leaves it up. The book leaves it up to the reader to draw his own conclusions. And it's a dreadful thing that was done. I would like to point out too that when the test scores go down, and they release the test scores, and they say the national assessment shows that we're at the bottom with Cyprus or whatever in academics, we all assume that they're upset. That we must stop assuming that they're upset. They're not.
Now, let me ask this. You've used a reference to the they several times.
They, yes, okay.
Who are the they?
Well, they've been around a long time, and they are the people on top. They're internationalists. They believe in world government. They believe in socialism. They believe that man is an animal to be trained rather than educated. They're humanists. Humanist Manifesto. They don't believe in God. They because they're socialists, they believe in the Soviet system. And it's hard to. And the most shocking thing of all is that they include the corporate sector, the multinational corporations, who are working closely with the left, with the socialists.
So
this, I think, is the hardest thing for people to understand. Why would the people that were basically like the foundations, the tax exempt foundations, why would they want to change America from a free individualistic economy to a... This is a direct quote from the Carnegie Corporation, right? 1934. In conclusions and recommendations for the social studies, which I have. It's a study that was performed, that was carried out by the American Historical Association in 1932, paid for by Carnegie.
Is that the Carnegie Foundation?
Carnegie Corporation.
Is that connected to the Carnegie Foundation?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And don't forget, Alger Hiss was a communist, too, and got us into the UN, right?
And so does he have something to do with Carnegie?
Oh, yes. Carnegie very, very deeply involved all the way along and has made my book very easy made any interview basically easy because I don't have to deal with all the foundations. Many of them have the same agenda, right? The same socialist world government agenda.
Well, like here on the central coast of California, the Packard Foundation is a good example of that.
Yeah, that's right, and many. But Carnegie has made it very easy, sort of like, I think it's what, in Little Red Riding Hood, didn't they go to Grandma's house and they left the pebbles and or the pieces of bread all the way along the way? Well, Carnegie has left the pebbles and pieces of bread for me all along the way, constantly. And so in 1934, when the final report came out, and I have the original little book, which is just dynamite, the basic thrust of that, and this is really pretty much a direct quote, was they would use the schools to change America from a free individualistic economy to a socialist planned economy in the new order. Not new world order, in the new order. And they've been involved ever since then, right up until today, with Mark Tucker and with the Carnegie's the workforce training, David Hornbeck, the whole restructuring of American education. But from that time on, you know, they went through, and they came to 1945, at the end of the war, and the UN was created, and you had Alger Hiss involved, you had, Brock Chisholm, a Canadian psychiatrist, very close to Hiss, was Carnegie, calling for getting rid of the conscience. Then you move on, and you have all the curriculum changes in 1965, jump 20 years, right? And you have the curriculum changes in 1965 under Lyndon Johnson. That was the big, big year when, the big, massive Elementary and Secondary Education Act, which really chucked academics and moved towards what I said earlier on, performance-based, results-based, outcomes-based, Skinner, Pavlov education.
Pause for a second here. Pavlov education. Now, most people think of Pavlov as in the context of dog training.
That's right. That's exactly what it is. And I think there's a very good, for those, I don't know how, some people probably do have my book in your audience, but on page 57... There's an incredible government document that I got a hold of called Soviet Education Proposals, Programs, Foundations, Curriculums, Teacher Preparation, and it was prepared by the U.S. Under the U.S. Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, and these American educators went to the Soviet Union, and in 1958, I think this was published in 1960, and it. If you read this, it calls for the Pavlovian conditioned reflex theory. It's right in here. And that's what we have now with the reading instruction, which is unfortunately has been foisted off on our children by the conservatives.
Now let me hang on for a second here. 1959, 1960, there's a dynamic going on between Soviet educators and American educators?
Yes, in a way. Our American educators went over there to study their system. And it says right here, it's quite something. In this school classroom and workshop in the machine building plant at the countryside, wherever we went, we felt the pulse of the Soviet government's drive to educate and train a new generation of technically skilled and scientifically literate citizens. And then it says, this is our system in spades. And it says, the curriculum is unified and it's the same for all schools, right, throughout the USSR. Principles of Darwinism. These are American educators talking, not me. Which are studied in grade 9 of schools, teach children about the origin of life. Main theme of the course is evolution. Major efforts of the schools during the past 30 years to train youngsters for the government's planned economic programs. Right?
So this is Soviet education being applauded by American educators
at
the time of the midst of the Cold War.
Let me say, it was not really that much applauded.
Okay.
These educators came back and shook their heads. It took a while. It really took a while for us to... this was in the 1960s. I hate to say this, but it was... We have been moving toward in this direction, as I said, since 1934, right? But it took the Reagan administration to put the building blocks in.
Now, you worked for the Reagan administration,
yes,
did you not?
I was right in the office where this was taking place. And I went to the in-service training. They would have, believe it or not, they'd have in-service training in the department. I would go and we'd take brown bag lunches. And I heard William Spady, the guru, Mr. Outcomes-Based Ed, the first time he was speaking at that time. And they were putting in the mastery learning, which is a Soviet system. It's Pavlov. And it says right here that Soviet patriotism and fidelity to the Soviet Union, communism and all, occupies a leading place in this educational conditioning. And in this sense, gives the school a political character as well as a moral one. Then they go, employing primarily the conditioned reflex theory, as elaborated by Pavlov, 1849-1936, Soviet psychologists have worked out a system of didactics which are strict and fixed in their conception and application. One might even use the term narrow to distinguish them from the broad scope of methods employed, for example, in most U.S. schools. Then it goes on to say, and think, folks, this is exactly what we're doing here now. It says, Soviet psychologists maintain that fundamentally all children can learn, right? Leave no child behind,
Yes.
They maintain that fundamentally all, except physically disturbed or handicapped children, can learn the standardized subject matter through the teaching methods designed for all schools.
Now, that can sound quite reasonable at first blush.
Well, that's our present problem with leave no child left behind. That's what they say.
That all children can learn the same materials. So
that's right.
And so so the Sovietizing nature of that comes from where?
Oh, it comes from way back it comes really back to the 1880s when American educators went to Leipzig, Germany, and studied under Wilhelm Wundt. Wilhelm Wundt was the father of the condition. You know, the latest article I wrote, it's on my website. Click on articles, and you'll see that revolution in education, Soviet style. And they went over there, and they were educated in the method. And Wilhelm Wundt believed, you know, psychology was what they used to study. The soul, but you can't control the soul, so they had to change it to animal training.
We'll be right back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show with our special guest, Charlotte Fizerbeat. We're back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. While some stations take a break for commercials, we're going to continue our discussion with Charlotte. And Charlotte, it's astounding to the average parent to think that they're sending their children off each day to a school system that is being run by Soviet stylists. And I'm sure it would surprise most teachers working in that system that their job can be considered as Soviet philosophy facilitators.
Well, yes, because most of the teachers, if you go back to the gradualism, really don't understand what Soviet education is. They've never learned it. They don't know what they're doing. They haven't the faintest idea. And a lot of people think communism is dead. And that's the biggest mistake.
Well, of course.
It's alive and well. But, one thing I was really surprised with my book, I was really surprised to find that it was the teachers who liked the book more than anybody else.
Wow.
They're very, very popular with educators. And then what is quite funny, it's evidently very, very popular with the very change agents that I've written about.
Well,
they have my book. You know, in fact, you know, I think every single State Department of Education has got it. The major change agents in the laboratories and centers funded by my old office have this book, because it's the only book that really gives you the history in direct quotes. You know, I'm not rambling around. These are things that happened. They were government funded, many of them. They were foundation and corporate funded. And they're very interested in seeing the history. The teachers are very relieved when they read the book. They think, oh, finally, I know I'm not crazy. Because teachers have been asking themselves for many years, why are we going through all these changes? This is ridiculous. Why do we have to change the teaching of reading and math and everything every 5 years? You know, what's wrong? Why do we change the history? Why do we change everything? What's going on? And so they found out when they read the book that there have been all these secret meetings, because I have a lot of documents from their secret meetings in different places like Jackson Hole, Wyoming, always lovely places where they all meet and they connive. How are they going to dumb down the American people? You know, people, maybe they understand better the dumbing down, if you point out that you can't take a country unless people are dumbed down. I mean, if the American people don't know, and this is true, they don't know these things. They don't know the Bill of Rights. They don't know the Constitution. They don't know the difference between socialism, fascism, capitalism, communism. They're never going to know when they have these horrible systems inflicted on them or when they have their own wonderful system taken away from them. I mean, they did that poll last year on the press, freedom of the press, and it was horrible. Something like 30% of high school students said they didn't think that journalists should have the right to write what they want without government approval.
Well, I know that same survey, I think, said that 85% think the government's job is to redistribute wealth. So
yeah.
All of the ideals upon which the American experience was built are really being undone. But it's very encouraging to hear that teachers are seeing your information as an explanation for the bizarre dynamics that they're involved in. We'll be right back here. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio station. And during the break, we continued our discussion with Charlotte Disabite, who informed us that it's teachers who've had a tremendous reaction to her book, Dumbing Down, the Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, and how it is that this reconciles for many teachers the dynamics that they're experiencing, including the degradation of our educational system. You know, Charlotte, it strikes me, we do shows on education, a lot of shows on land use, and so many of the same dynamics, the same phraseology and terminology that is being used to steal the American landscape from the American people, and the undoing of private property in this country, including the recent Kelo Supreme Court case, and even more importantly, the Lingle Supreme Court case, have such parallels to what's going on in the educational system. You talk about the globalists, the political globalists that are behind this educational change dynamic, and it sure begins to become clear that they're the same people, the same corporations and the same foundations and the same political philosophy that is behind the dumbing down, the deliberate dumbing down of our youth.
Well, that's true. And, for instance, you just mentioned that you know, in the environmental concerns, that big brainwashing with environmental education, there's no question about that. But talk about transportation or the environment or commerce or whatever you're looking at, you'll see that we're dealing with a system, and you're dealing with systems management. You're dealing with total quality management. And total quality management really goes back to planning, programming, budgeting, management system. And so they were put into the schools in California in the 60s. Tremendous battle going on out there in the 60s under Ronald Reagan. And the teachers were furious. They fought hard to keep the system from taking over. People say, what's the system? The system's very simple. They lead people to believe they're going to have something to do with the goals that are being set, but they have nothing to do. The goals are set at the top. And then through all these little groups, consensus-making groups, et cetera, you're made to feel that you're involved, but you're not. The goals are set at the top. And there's a very interesting quote somewhere in my book, in my little book, too. By the way, let me point out, just for folks who aren't ready to buy my great big book, on my website, there's a little book that is, you can download free. It's a little ebook, and I've given to people free. It's called Back to Basics Reform, or Skinnerian International Curriculum. And then a little print necessary for United States participation in a one-world government in the early years of the 21st century. I wrote it in 1985, and it was, sorry to say, boycotted by the major conservative organizations. That's a shock, isn't it?
Well, it's no shock here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, because clearly the leftist-rightist dynamic, that is the ultimate dialectic, the ultimate artificial dialectic, has played itself in permanent harmony to bring us to this new global order. I mean, President Bush or President Clinton both are totally involved in that. And from what I learned from people like you is that so was Ronald Reagan. And that's heartbreaking to many, many people. I mean, he had a silver tongue and a golden spirit, so it seemed. But gee whiz, he was the fellow who brought regionalism. That's the ultimate political dynamic for changing into the global world here to California. And he's the guy, along with Margaret Thatcher, that brought us this phony free trade that disseminates the national, decimates national sovereignty. And your report is that while you were working in his education department, and of course he ran on the platform that he was going to get rid of Jimmy Carter's educational agency at the federal level, and that is in fact where globalist education really took root in the American society, as I understand from your writings.
Right. Oh yes, well, that's the most important thing. I always say after an interview, if there's one thing that you must remember from this interview, it's that there isn't any difference between the right and the left at the top, and it is at the top. I mean, I get pretty upset with the conservatives whenever they start beating up. We start talking about education. They beat up on the teachers' union, and you'll notice that they don't beat up on the U.S. Department of Ed. And I always point out that when my office, the U.S. Department of Ed, we used to fund the NEA. We funded them under Ronald Reagan. A major grant that went out to control all technology in the schools, every area of the curriculum, was made to the National Education Association. I got fired for leaking that document to the press.
Wow.
Yes, and all that's all in my book. But people should go and read the little Back to Basics, because it has dynamite quotes in there. It tells the American people exactly what was happening, how the schools were going to be completely changed under outcomes-based education, mastery learning, that it was all Skinner. It explains the Northwest Regional Laboratory goals, all of which, none of which were what Americans would want their children to have. Everything was in there. The North Carolina curriculum for global education in 1984 was there, having little children design a new American flag. You know, so that little book is important. It's free on my website, deliberatedumbingdown.com. Of course, I'd like to have you buy the big book, but if you're not ready to do that, do read that little book, because it's terribly important. Now, the reason I thought about that little book is we were talking about the system, and you have it in the environment, you have it in transportation, you have it in every part of government. You have the same system. Really, it's total quality management. We used to call it. It came out of the Department of Defense under McNamara, planning, programming, budgeting. And it went into California under Reagan in education. The teachers fought it. But this is a quote from the Florida State Education Department. This is the Associate Commissioner, I think, of Education. In 1972, and it says, entitled Schools to Try New Programs. See, this is after Reagan had put it into California. He says, quote, "We're putting all the various components together now. What we're doing should soon become very visible. However, he estimates it will take 7 to 10 years. Okay. He said many people in the State Department of Education are working independently on various facets and aspects of the program. And like those assembling the atom bomb, very few of them understand exactly what they are building. and won't and we put until we put all the parts together. Okay, that's a very important quote.
It sure is.
Yeah, and
yeah, well,
like
we see that in the land use dynamic of sustainable development as well. You talk about total quality management, but that today is generally called sustainable development,
that's
and they keep
right.
changing their terms, but it's the same dynamic that's pushing us, whether it be property or parenthood,
right.
and they're swallowing your parenthood, listener, and your property in piece by piece, you know, and now the wall has become quite huge.
Yes, and it is it's an international system. I mean, you've got to understand that the No Child Left Behind legislation is not national. It's education for all. That was the conference in 1989, or I'm not sure, 90, which Barbara Bush and the Soviet Minister of Education attended in Washington. And that came after the major conference, Education for All, in Thailand.
Wow.
And so what we're looking at, this is an international system geared towards brainwashing, total brainwashing, changing the human being from an individual with a conscience, a soul, et cetera, to nothing but a machine to be manipulated in the global economy for the good of the corporations and the international government. And so you've got to have the right thinking, and like this new civics legislation that is being rammed through Congress.
Can you imagine, now, listeners, a civics lesson legislation where the federal government is now, the federal government in compliance with global designs is now going to tell every teacher how they have to teach government, and of course that new teaching is more in line with the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights than it is with the United States Declaration of Independence. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, absolutely, yes, and this of course may come as a shock. To most Americans, it really will come as a shock, but there's nothing too much new about this. I mean, the National Assessment was Carnegie. Carnegie funded the National Assessment in 1968, I guess, in 1968.
So you see Carnegie all through the education.
Carnegie Corporation. Yeah, and they had the National Assessment, and 60% of the National Assessment now, which is mandated, by the way, it didn't used to be, is attitudinal. It's politically correct. And so that means that in every area, you know, it would be in the environment and in social studies and everything is political. 60%. That means how do you feel about your parents, you know, do you feel that, human beings were more important than the spotted owl? You know, all these politically correct. What do you think about the UN? I remember the comprehensive health education curriculum. I was on a local school board in the 70s, and I got a hold of the comprehensive health education curriculum, which was unbelievable. I mean, they were, this really, we wonder why this would be in a health curriculum. It was understanding the need for a world government. That's in a health education curriculum. Well, the money came from the Kettering, from Kellogg Foundation, okay? The money for it, most of it, and then we had seed money from the state. But the Kellogg Foundation built the huge World Health Organization building in Washington, D.C. And then, of course, you had Brock Chisholm, you know, who I quoted before, Alger Hiss's good friend, saying we've got to, you know, get rid of the conscience. And all of the curriculum that came 20 years after Chisholm said that from the Elementary and Secondary Education Act was geared towards getting rid of the conscience. He said we have to retrain the teachers to become little psychiatrists in the classroom.
My.
And that is exactly what happened under the Behavior Science Teacher Education Program. All the teachers were completely retrained to be little facilitators, psychiatrists, not academics, performance-based, outcomes-based, results-based, everything that we see. And teachers, a lot of teachers got out back then. I know I saw some of the original papers on the Behavioral Science Teacher Education Program where especially administrators in some of the meetings, so they said, no way, I'm getting out. I'm not staying in here. This isn't education. And I have to point that out, that there are many American educators who absolutely detest. I found this out because of my book. I've had more phone calls and letters In fact, this is funny. I had an email from a teacher, a 30-year teacher in Louisiana, poor Louisiana, about 2 months ago, and he said that he'd read both of my books, the little one and the big one. He just loved them. And he said, some of my left-wing teacher friends probably would have hysterics if they knew I was even talking to you. But especially if they knew I was telling you I liked your book. And then he went on to say, by the way, he said, I'm agnostic and I'm liberal. And I thought, this is the greatest compliment I ever had in my whole life.
Well, that's the big awakening. When people understand that we are being dealt a nasty set of cards by people at the top, as you've described it,
yes.
And it doesn't matter if you or your neighbor is liberal or conservative.
That's right.
We are ordinary people, and it's our ordinariness that is under attack by this global design that makes us into biological resources to serve a global corporate elite along with that political elite. And
beautiful.
That is neither left nor right. That is ordinary human beings against the powercrats. And for us to take charge, teachers need to simply start saying no, and parents need to start simply saying no to this kind of indoctrination of our children. Let's talk about the classroom and how it is that our children are actually being affected by these kinds of new age, change agent dynamics.
Well, it's the brainwashing, it's the collective, it's the group, you know, working in the group, no individuality allowed, and then constant questionnaires and surveys asking them, which this has been going on for ages. I mean, I don't know why parents haven't figured it out yet, but some of the curriculum in the 70s when I was, actually, I was very involved in getting the hearings for the Protection of Pupil Rights Amendment when I was in the Department of Ed. And because I had been a school board member and started an organization in my state, Guardians of Education for Maine, I knew what horrible programs were being used at the local level. I mean, I'd seen our school was a major pilot for change. We had a superintendent out of Harvard who was a change agent. And in fact, I went through change agent training. A retired teacher paid for me to go because she wanted me to really see where the rot was coming from. And I went, and I was appalled. They trained me the facilitator, who was funded by my old office, the office that I would subsequently be in, the Office of Educational Research and Improvement, he was funded by that office. The money went into the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, for his research, and his book was called Innovations in Education, A Change Agent's Guide. That was the textbook, and I have it in my office here. But we went through the training, and we were taught how to identify the resistors.
My, and you know, we certainly have had a lot of people connected with us at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz who have been those resistors, and they have survived their resistance to be able to talk about the mechanical devices that are used by schools in order to isolate parents who speak with any sense of reason.
Oh, yes, and I mean, and also the key word is mental health. I mean, if you speak out and you tell the truth, immediately you're labeled a kook. Because people don't really like to associate with crazy people, right? So that's the first thing they will do to you. And I learned all of this. I learned about red flag words. Don't mention the word values, you know, and all the Christian right will pop up and they'll all get after you and beat up on you, stuff like that.
And this is government funded training.
Yes. This is the textbook.
So this is what our taxes are going to our own demise as a free society.
Right. Well, I also, but then after that, when I got into the department, I was sent, because my boss was getting suspicious about what I was doing in my office. He sent me somewhere else, which was very foolish of him. He sent me uptown to the National Institute of Education, where all of the rot comes from, the major rot. The worst in the world comes out of there. It's a Marxist factory. And so I went through all the grants and contracts, you know, the printouts on the computer printouts. And the guy who I was working with, my boss wanted me to, he thought it was a cut and dried operation that, you know, the general accounting office or whatever was doing a waste, fraud, and abuse thing to find out whether grants and contracts, whether the people in the field who were getting the money were submitting their quarterly reports, this sort of thing, right? And little did he know that Charlotte was going to be getting deep into what the doo-doo. I mean, really, I found one, just the guy I was working with was just regular bureaucrat, nice guy. And I ran across a grant to the University of Michigan for a values-changing program for elementary school children. And it called on pre- and post-testing of their values after the program was over and everything, and it was just horrible. And I showed it to this fellow, and I said, look, what do you think about this? I said, you know, we're meant to be checking on waste, fraud, and abuse, but don't you consider this wasteful, fraudulent, and abusive in another way?
Mm, yes.
Yeah. And he looked at it, and he said, I sure do. You know, he was as shocked as I was. And I said, can I have more? How much time can I have? Because I really want to go through this stuff. And he said, you can have as long as you want.
Hmm.
You see, these are the good people in government. And I really do get tired of beating up constantly like there aren't any good people in government. I mean, my book has tremendous amount of information that was sent to me after I was fired by top career officers. One was the liaison with UNESCO.
Wow.
He sent me unbelievable stuff after I got out. And I didn't have any help from the conservatives who are sent in there, the political appointees, no help at all.
No. Well, you know, people who label themselves as the conservative, I mean, the insiders who label themselves conservative are just like the insiders who label themselves as liberal. They are working two sides of the same
That's
string.
Right. Yep.
And the rest of us need to come to figure that out.
It's terribly important to understand. And you know, since, you know, we don't have all the time in the world, I think the best way for people to understand is that the plan was made a long time ago to merge the two systems, the Soviet and American system.
Talk about the Reagan-Gorbachev compact
to
do just
that. The agreement that Reagan signed with Gorbachev in 1985, which basically merged the two education systems. And it called for all kinds of exchanges of teachers and curriculum, and especially technology, tremendous amount of going back and forth in regard to computers, computer-assisted instruction. I hope people will go on my website to read the article I wrote on the computers being, I think it was in Arizona, where they said they're getting rid of the books, and they're going to use, this is very, very dangerous stuff, folks. When they're
I have read that article, and I recommend it, because to understand how they will arranged to pull the final strings on this Pavlovian concept of child indoctrination is very curious, and the technology is there, and the tools are waiting to be misused and really implode the conscience and the free will and the humanity of our children, and of course the consequences that has for the next generation and for really the future of humanity are just overwhelming.
Yeah, at the future of the human being, you know, we are human beings, we're not animals, and that in itself, that article is important, and it draws on a great deal of research in my book. I have a tremendous amount of research in my book on technology and on the method. And again, I have to say that back then, back in the 60s and all, when they were working on the initial technology plans for the computer, and Yusuf Skinner, Pressey, a whole crowd, Gagne, Bloom, of course, is the father of outcome-based education, mastery learning, all these people, I mean, he said, I have to point this out, Benjamin Bloom, he was the he's the author of the taxonomy of educational objectives. All teachers have to go through that course, right?
And that course is what? Is that a Soviet system of education?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he was a humanistic, a socialist, whatever. But he defined education. The purpose of education, he said, was to change the thoughts, actions, and feelings of students.
Not to give them the information they need and the skills they need to lead a productive life.
That's right. And then he defined good teaching as, get this, challenging the students' fixed beliefs.
Wow. In other words, to separate them from their parents.
Absolutely. And then
this is the system that we're employing today?
Absolutely. That is the system. And Bloom is right on. I mean, there are millions of quotes all of us can use, like Dunphy, getting rid of the rotten corpse of Christianity, right? Things like that. But I always think the Bloom quote is absolutely vital. He also said that he can take a student, this is all in my book, folks, quotes, from here to there in 1 hour. From a belief in God to being an atheist in 1 hour.
Hmm.
Effectively wreck his values in 1 hour.
Hmm.
And so we wonder why after 12 years they have nothing left. They've been stripped of all of their values, everything mom and dad taught them. I think, you know, getting back to the Soviet system, this has been the plan. I think it's important to go to 1953 when Norman Dodd, the research director for the Rees Committee investigating the tax-exempt foundations like Carnegie, Ford, Rockefeller, and all, when he was told by the president of the Ford Foundation that, Mr. Dodd, you know, don't get after us, we don't design our agenda. It comes out of the White House.
And the White House increasingly is coming out of the globalist political community.
Well, that's right. But he just said the White House, and they got their instructions from the White House, and those instructions—that was Eisner at the time—are to use our money to change America, so it can be comfortably merged with the Soviet Union.
My.
What could be more clear?
What can be more clear, that's for sure. You know, most people would say, well, I know there's problems with government education, but not in my hometown. Let me give you a couple of examples, Charlotte, from this hometown in Santa Cruz. One of the high schools has what they call the breaking the wills, or they like to call it breaking the walls, of the students. And they put all the kids in these, in the gymnasium. They don't tell the parents first, and they start asking very personal questions, and the child is somewhat psychologically rewarded if he crosses the line by answering yes to such personal questions, like have you ever had a homosexual desire, or do your parents smoke marijuana, or do your parents own a gun, and et cetera. And these questions just go on unabated year after year. And then we have another school, a brand new school built on a swamp, and the principal was quoted in a recent newspaper as saying, "Our students need to become global citizens," said Principal Rodriguez. "They need to learn how to take care of this land around them." And what they're doing, largely with Hispanic students down there, is they're putting them out as swamp restorationists, where they start planting plants. And as a plant guy myself, I can tell you they're doing it even the wrong way. I mean, they're making no progress. But instead of teaching these children information, they're teaching them how to become, you know, little swamp masters. And then up on the other side of the county, we've got PhD candidates from San Luis Obispo University who are out there creating restored creeks that are absolute failures. They're just weeds. You get these PhD candidates out there pulling weeds out to the seeds are viable. They throw them on the ground as though they're doing something. Right. And so what we've got is nonsense working at every level. And then, of course, we have the International Baccalaureate program up at one of the schools in the North County, and that school is just completely out of line when it comes to this kind of dynamic. How do people come to accept that their own schools are rotten to the core when it comes to the administration of the philosophy that's being implemented for our children?
I don't know. They'll tell you that if you complain, they'll say, "Oh, it's not going on here." And the parents believe that. But I mean, why don't the parents ask themselves, why is it there? We have the same thing here you're talking about. I mean, down Falmouth, Maine, and in that area, there are lots of pretty swamps and everything. I go by all the time on the highway, and they have these kids in high school out there slugging their way through the swamp, testing water. And, you know, this is absolutely ridiculous. What a waste of time. They can't read, they can't write, they can't count, they can't talk.
But
they hardly think.
But they've become subjected to swamp psychology.
This is true, and it goes way back.
We'll be right back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Show. We're back here while some stations take a break for a couple minutes with our special guest, Charlotte Iserbeet, and we're talking about education in America today and about her book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, the thesis of which was garnered by Charlotte while she was working at the Federal Department of Education back in the Reagan years. And it's been quite a story, and the dynamics that you've been talking about now for a long time become more and more obvious. And yet, the time is getting to where American parents and American property owners need to know that one way or the other, we're all being squeezed. We're being squeezed into this dynamic of a new world with sustainable principles. And ultimately, the question becomes not how much do you know and how much can you contribute, but how sustainable, meaning how useful are you to the new emerged public-private partnerships that are being arranged between global corporations and governments around the world as we move ourselves to a one-world government. With the complete cooperation of men like George Bush or Bill Clinton, it really doesn't matter. George Bush who just 2 years ago said it is the sacred principles enshrined in the United Nations Charter to which the American people will henceforth pledge their allegiance. Now, that was a senior Bush. The junior Bush said the founding documents of the United Nations and the founding documents of America stand in the same tradition. And yet nobody takes accord of the declaration, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that's contained in the global documents. In Article 29, Section 3, it says, the rights and freedoms granted by the United Nations may in no case be exercised contrary to the principles and purposes of the United Nations. Well, that's the exact opposite of the basis of the founding of the American Republic, and we've got our high leaders all committed to the transformation of America into this Soviet system, a Soviet educational system, a Soviet land ownership system, a Soviet work system, and we're just blithely going along because there's so many dollars out there that we tend to feel secure in this new dynamic.
Well, I think that's beautifully said, and you made me think of an article that is on my website that I wrote called Walks Like a Duck, Talks Like a Duck. And I wrote that about 2 years ago in regard to George Bush and how he's implementing the Soviet system. And I go through every single thing he's done. But at that point, he had not yet done the Mental Health Initiative.
Wow.
Which, of course, and I don't know whether he'd done the faith-based. Well, yeah, he did the faith-based because that came even before.
Hold that thought for
Clinton.
A second, Charlotte. We'll be right back here at this. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. We've got a few minutes left with our special guest, Charlotte Iserbeet, author of The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. And Charlotte is describing for us how it is the Bush administration is leading us very rapidly to this Soviet system of education.
Yes, and not just the Soviet system of education, everything. I mean, if you go to that article, Walks Like a Duck, Talks Like a Duck, you'll see that it is in every area possible. Regionalism, of course, that's communism. Most people don't know that.
Let me explain that. I mean, we've had some shows on regionalism, and for those who haven't heard it, regionalism means that you break down political boundaries. You break down social and cultural boundaries. And you can go back as long ago, 2,700 years ago, to Isaiah, who said that if you want to gather all the riches of all the people, all you need to do is blur their boundaries. That means regionalism.
That's right. That's true. And Napoleon actually was the first one to carry this out in Europe. But I have a little quote in my book that's excellent on that. It's a communist writer for the Daily World, and I've held on to that one for a long time. It's easy, you know. Usually we just have barrels of documents on everything, but this is just one quote, and he says we're moving too slowly in the United States towards regionalism, and he goes on to say it works so well in the Soviet Union. And I like that because that tells you that what regionalism is.
Exactly, and if you're a farmer in the Pajaro Valley and you haven't caught on to the notion of regionalism yet, just understand the Regional Water Quality Control Board is the source of your problems. Those people weren't elected, but they are a Soviet-sized system of government without accountability, and who just make the rules as they go along, and you're paying the price. So whether it's the Regional Air Quality Board or the Regional Transportation Commission or the Regional Water Board, this is how you Sovietize the politics of a country, and of course, legislation like No Child Left Behind is how you Sovietize our educational process.
That's right. So it's being done to us. It's been done to us, and solutions as far as education are concerned, the only solution is homeschooling. And I want to point out to those who still don't understand how wonderful homeschooling is, you know, who talk about socialization, all that garbage.
We've got about a minute left, so
yeah, okay.
Give that punch on homeschooling or whatever you want to do.
Homeschoolers have got to, let's talk about the Wall Street Journal. 2 years ago, I had an article about the Ivy League colleges, as bad as they are, and they aggravate me no end, but when they start looking first at homeschool applications for entry into their colleges before anything else, that has to tell you something, that the homeschoolers are the only ones really getting a good education. There are good private schools out there too. I don't mean there aren't, but they won't be good if they ever take a penny. No vouchers, no tuition. Don't ever take a penny from the federal government, state or local.
Take the king's shilling, you do the king's work.
Yes, absolutely. And you're going to have to do a charter school, same thing. Like Bill Bennett's charter school, technology charter school, cyber school. Don't go near it, because he's admitted to homeschoolers who are using that they're going to have to take the national test, a mandated national test.
Which is the process of indoctrinating and making everybody think
the
same.
Okay, you teach to the test. That means you're going to have the national curriculum.
Wow. Well, I want to thank you for being our guest tonight. Your work has been so inspiring to myself and so many people around the country. And, the wheels of our progress are just beginning to roll. But when Al Gore says America is destined for a wrenching transformation, he thinks that we're just going to take it sitting down. And those change agents who want to change America from a free society to a Soviet society where our action is controlled and our numbers are limited have another thing coming, because there is a rise in reason occurring in the United States. And your work in the educational area is so fundamental to all good things that can come later. So I want to thank you so much, Charlotte.
Thank you, Mike. You are Mike. Isn't it Mike I've been talking to?
Michael, yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I wondered. I heard you say someone else might be on. I thought I was talking to you, Michael.
Yes.
Right. So anyway, thank you very, very much for the interview. And we'll keep in touch. And congratulations on what you're doing out there.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay?
Good night.
Bye-bye.
And until the next hour, our new host, Roy Aguilar, will be with you just shortly.
Views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Whoa, that Michael Shaw, he gets all fired up and talks about all these great things that we all really need to know about. And I think, you know, with school being on and, you know, kids and parents getting back kind of into the school thing, that was very appropriate. And we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the things that are going on in the education system in the second half hour. With some folks from EdWatch, you know, right now the schools are promoting Constitution Day, which is September the 17th, and it's really undermining the Constitution, so we'll get all the details from Julie Quist with EdWatch. But our next guest we had on a while back, and we thought we would bring her back just because... Well, just because, you know, there's so much going on with homes and home ownership, and, you know, the home industry is blowing up. It's as hot as it's ever been, but a lot of folks are getting caught up in the whole web of homeowner associations. So if you're considering buying a home, or, you know, maybe you just got into a home that has a homeowners association, our next guest is one of the frontline soldiers on the information that you need to know about what's happening with homeowners association. Our guest is Shu Bartholomew. Well, she's going to be our guest, Shu Bartholomew. She is the host of On the Commons radio program. It's a weekly show you can listen to. It's on the web and that, but you know, she's came to our Freedom 21 conference in August, and we had a chance to meet her and, you know, talk about some of the things that she's doing. And since then, she's had several. I think Michael Shaw has been on with her show. I know she's had Henry Lamb. She's also had Tom DeWeese. She's had a lot of the folks on her program who are in the Freedom movement, and so we're hooking up with her as we speak. You know, technology across the country. Michael, are you going to join us?
Well, I'll be here until we get Shu up on the line, and because she's the one who really has the information about how homeowner associations really operate to implement some of these change dynamics that we talked about in the last hour in the educational field with Charlotte Iserbeit. And of course, it's these change dynamics that are coming out of the Department of Interior and the Department of Agriculture, and there's change agents everywhere. And in so many ways, these homeowner associations, which are the details of which are worked out through county planning departments, are a participant in that changing process of putting people under the control of increasing regulations, such that our lives, each of our lives, become subject to this new dynamic where human beings are really just tools for implementing a global corporate state. You know, it's amazing how capitalism in America has evolved to the point where, and it's really based on the funny money system, and Dr. Edward Vieira did a great discussion here on the War on Reason several months ago of how it is that our funny money system has aggregated the economic power in our country in such a way that that our liberties are slipping away. And so when the planning department works with homeowners or home builders to build these homeowner associations, it's all about instituting controls right there at the homeowner level, such that sometimes you've got in this county now, new homeowner associations are going to limit the amount of water you can use, or right, limit the amount of electricity you can use.
Well, and they're also, with the public-private partnerships of building these new neighborhoods, it's all, you know, to eliminate cars, to put you on the light rail, to have you, you know, work to school you know, all the things that we talk about with all of the guests that come on this program.
Well, that's right. Public-private partnership is the core of all of this dynamic. I heard on one of the news stations today about the New American Initiative for a Public-Private Partnership in Health. Well, you know, we've been moving toward that for a long time as we socialize our health system and make it less and less effective at meeting the needs of the people. And all of it has, when you talk public-private partnership, what you're talking about is aggregating all the economic power and using the force of government to do it in a few hands. Nobody wins from this left-right dynamic that's called public-private partnership.
Well, yeah, you know, the school's built there. You know, there's no street. I saw a neighborhood that was built with no garages.
No garages. Well,
there's a brand new neighborhood, but no garages. What's that telling you? Well, you don't need a car.
You don't need a car. Well, they're going to put these around the train stations, and the new office under Arnold Schwarzenegger is the Department of Housing, Transportation, and Jobs. So we've got in this, the woman who heads this used to be the head of the Bay Area
Council
for Sustainable Development.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go. They're going to combine your work, your transportation, and your job, and it's all going to be by government issue so long as you do what you're told.
Because you're going to have that education. That, what did our last guest say? That the new education is to train students to accept
their work assignment. You know, and if you're being assigned to the swamp as a restoration manager or restoration worker, well, gee whiz, that's your use on this planet Earth as determined by your community.
Well, we got Shu with us. Shu, how are you?
Hi, Roy. I'm fine. How are you?
Michael's going to leave us now. He's working on some papers, and he's got some speeches he's got to do, so I think we're going to let him go home.
Oh, I'm sorry. Goodbye, Michael.
Bye-bye, Shu. I'm going to...
Where are you going to be speaking, Michael?
Well, I'm speaking in an industry association next week here in the Bay Area.
Yeah, for those of you who are breaking away, go ahead, Michael. Where are you going to be?
Well, at an industry association up in San Leandro, and last week I spoke to a Federated Women's Republican group up in Auburn, and
opened some eyes there.
I think so. I spoke at a Rotary association in the Central Valley of California, and it is amazing. People who've not heard the term sustainable development, and you begin to present the information in a 45 minutes or so, and their eyes are popping out. They've seen it all over the place, and they become concerned. And that's what needs to spread around the United States is when people become concerned, then the few powercrats, the globalists, the people who would deny liberty to each and every one of us, will be divested of their power. And that's the only step between America today and America that can be, not too far in the future.
Yeah, speaking of sustainable development, part of that whole concept is something called new urbanism, which is just pretty speak for increased density. And what they don't like, what the new urbanists don't like, is cars. And if you look at what happened in New Orleans, where you have hundreds of thousands of people who rely on public transportation, do not have their own vehicles, are crammed in there one on top of the other. In the event of a disaster, that public transportation is non-existent.
Yeah, because when the drivers take off, there's no one to transport people.
That's right.
I was just telling Michael before you came on, you know, we were talking about homeowners associations and, you know, some of the new buildings. I recently saw a whole new subdivision go up, and I forgot where it was, but there were no garages in the homes.
Mm-hmm. And guess what that means? A lot of problems. Well, actually, a lot of the new urbanist designs have alleys in the back because they don't want cars. And the other problem is that when they don't want cars, they discourage vehicles, they discourage people from getting together. There's no place to park. They have these very narrow streets. Emergency vehicles can't get to the... You know, it's just a whole mess. And yet they come up with, oh, well, it's pedestrian-friendly, and guess what? If you live in one of these things, you won't get fat because you'll be doing a lot of walking. Isn't that wonderful?
And if you do, then they'll fine you for...
that's a whole different story.
For light on the neighborhood, right?
Oh, that's a whole... Now we're getting into a whole different realm over here about parking and towing and... finding, and it's just wonderful.
Well, talk about, for people who haven't, you know, had the experience of being involved in a homeowners association, kind of, you know, its evolution and where it is today.
Well, it's where it is today is over 50 million Americans live in some 270,000 mandatory membership associations. These include single-family homes, townhouses, and condominiums, among other things. I mean, there are things like cooperatives and so on as well, but there are not that many of those. They're wonderful for local municipal governments. They're terrific for developers. They're not so great for the homeowners. Yet they're sold as protecting property value. They're wrapped up in this pretty packaging that's basically nonsense. It's a little bit like the pedestrian-friendly stuff we were talking about just a minute ago. This is a way to tax you and not provide you with services. It's a wonderful way for the developer to increase density. You know, he buys 100 acres, and instead of putting up 300 houses on a third of an acre each, he can now just really build tons and tons and tons more houses because, you know, they don't have to worry about it. They don't have to provide the streets. The streets don't have to be up to code. They can gate it. They can, you know, people just buy into this notion, oh, it's gated. Oh, this is wonderful. We have control over it. It's just nothing more than a form of double taxation.
Without representation.
Well, supposedly, you know, you're supposed to have a board that you elect, but, I mean, that's a whole different issue. I mean, that's not even close to being representation. It's power struggle, it's ego trips, it's just incredible.
Well, too, and then, you know, what I'm seeing in these new developments is not only what you're saying, but just the whole design. You know, mm-hmm. they're trying to force you mm-hmm. out of your car.
Yes.
You know, they're trying to force you yes. to put in only native plants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're trying to force you. So you really have no free rights over your own property.
No, you don't. What they'll tell you is you don't have to buy in there. But when everything is in an association, when the local municipal government mandates the association, you really have nowhere else to go.
Well, it's all part of that smart growth.
Yeah, it is.
Are there any new housing that's being built that doesn't have homeowners associations involved with it?
You know, there are very few of them, and in those instances, the developer, from what I understand, will actually advertise no HOA.
No HOA,
because it's become, you know, finding these are as rare as hen's teeth. And so people want them. They don't want the association. They don't want to have to deal with it unless they've bought into the notion that, oh, well, I can control what my neighbor does. And, you know, without the association, I can't prevent my neighbor from doing something that I don't want him to do. They don't realize that the neighbor has just as much power and the ability to control you, but no, they don't think about that.
Well, I'm sure a lot of that is thanks to your show. You've been doing this for a while, trying to educate people on the horrors of a homeowners association.
I try to point out that it's not what they're told it is. And again, you know, Roy, it's funny, but people just don't listen. I was talking to, in fact, I was giving a speech, and one guy says to me, sure, it's not as bad as you say it is. And I said, what do you mean? He says, well, you see, I live in an association. I mean, I get this more than once. I live in an association, and we just don't have those problems. And then they tell me what association they live in. Well, if it's in Virginia, chances are I've heard from someone or it's been in the news. So I say, oh, well, you know, that's not true. Oh, yeah, you see, I know it's been in the news. I realize that. And I also know that my neighbor down the street's having problems. But you see, we don't have those problems because it hasn't happened to me.
Yet.
Yet. Exactly. You got it, Roy. It hasn't happened to me yet. Therefore, these problems don't exist.
Well, you know, I'm here in California. Well, all over the country, there's a big housing boom going on. You know, mm-hmm. I think the ownership and the purchases of homes has never gone at the rate that it's going. And you know, I've talked to a few people, and they said, "Oh no, you know, that's a really nice place." And then all of a sudden, after 6 or 7 months, it's like, you know, I hung my clothes out in the backyard to dry, and I got a letter.
Yeah, and I got fined.
Yeah, and we'll talk about some of the ridiculous things that you've heard from the people that have come to call your show.
Well, you know, Voltaire said, "God make my, you know, grant me one wish, make mine enemies ridiculous." And you know, nowhere are you going to find people that are as ridiculous as the people who run associations. They'll come up with just about any silly excuse. I mean, if you want to get your listeners really upset,
always.
If you're patriotic and you want to fly the American flag, associations typically don't allow you to fly the American flag.
And what's their usually reasoning behind that?
Well, you see, they'll tell you that you can, but if you hang it from a pole in your yard, then they'll say that it's the pole that they object to. But you can hang it from the house. If you hang it from the house, then you've got some associations to say, "Oh no, you're putting holes in the building, and we don't want that."
You can stick it
in the flower box over here. You know, just totally ridiculous. There was a dentist in Minnesota, I think, a few years ago, 78-year-old, was born in Japan, still practicing dentistry, and he wanted to do something. So he went out and bought a bunch of little flags and gave them to his neighbors. He said, "Here, would you like me to put these in your mailboxes for you?" And so he adorned the mailboxes, and the board just went absolutely ballistic. You can't have that. People who have planters, you know, you can't have planters. Or flower pots that are cracked. Or some guy was given a notice because the manager happened to drive by while he was mowing the lawn. They found grass clippings on the sidewalk, and he was cited. He was mowing the lawn. He was in the process of mowing the lawn. You know, just absolutely ridiculous. Toys that are left in the front yard, laundry, as you said, brown spots in the grass. You know, just ridiculous. You've got something on your mailbox, or the mailbox is not approved, or you've got too many flowers in your garden, or they're not the right shade of pink or purple or whatever it happens to be. The most ridiculous thing.
Well, if you have a story about, you know, your dealings with the Homeowners Association, give us a call, 1-888-245-4237. That's 1-888-245-4237. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Shu Bartholomew and tell you how your homeowners association is controlling your life. Welcome back. We're talking to Shu Bartholomew, the host of On the Commons radio program, about the, I don't know, terrorism. Probably a little harsh, but...
Oh, that's okay. You can call it terrorism.
Well, I'm sure, you know, I remember the last time we talked. We talked about an elderly lady who, you know, her homeowners association just was on her so bad. I can't imagine what she has gone through. Someone who thought they owned their house and everything was fine, and here comes this homeowners association
you know, finding her till, you know, they kick her out of her house.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they do that. They refuse to accept payments, even though payments are tendered, as per their agreement. They, you know, the board doesn't have to take the money. And then they can add late fees, and then they can get the attorney to send a letter, and pretty soon a few $100 ends up being a few $1,000s, and then they foreclose.
Well, we got a caller from Pennsylvania. We have Roger on the line. Roger, you got a question or a comment?
Just a quick, remember, I don't know if it was zoning or homeowners association as such, but the nationwide celebrity case, apparently the rules didn't preclude him from planting the bus nose first in his lawn. So he had this whole three quarters of the bus sticking up, and unless they relented, you know, he could paint his house the way he wanted. He wasn't about
good for him.
He wasn't about to get rid of that bus. God
bless that man. Well, you know, it is your property. I mean, you know, I think that's what, you know, our, as sometimes people don't like that, but Michael Shaw always talks about, if it's your property, as long as it's not physically hurting anybody, you should be. If I want to paint my house chartreuse with, you know, some ugly colored doors, well, hey, that's my house.
There was a guy down in one of the southern states, I don't remember exactly where, and the board, he was told to repaint. They didn't like the color of the house, or they didn't like the stoop, or there's something they didn't like about it. But his house was this really dark green. So what he did was he got a bunch of paper plates, and he painted them purple, and he stuck them on the house, so it looked like it looked like this house had this bad case of acne or something. And, you know, of course, the media got involved, and there were pictures all over the place, and finally, I think he made his point. Recently, just within the last few days, since Katrina, there was an association in Florida called Majestic Oaks that sent out a notice to the residents, to the homeowners there, telling them that their covenants prohibited them from taking in anybody, lest they were thinking of taking in evacuees, you know, be it known that we cannot do this. This story quite rightly grew legs, and it was covered across the country. I mean, the whole country had heard about Majestic Oaks. I covered it last week on my show. I think Fox did it. It was in all the papers. Everybody, you know,
did anything happen from it?
Yes. You know what happened? The homeowners themselves got really upset. They showed up at a meeting. They complained about it. Two of the board members resigned. One of them because she didn't know anything about it. The other one said, I didn't fight this hard enough.
I'm going to take a quick break. Hang on to that. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 radio program. We're with Shu Bartholomew from the On the Commons program. She was telling us about how in Florida, a homeowners association, the Majestic Oaks homeowners, sent out a notice to their homeowners that they could not take in any folks who were hurt by Hurricane Katrina. So go on, I'm sorry.
So anyway, the homeowners got upset. A few of them got active. They went out with flyers. They said they wanted to recall the board. Some people said they were just totally ashamed and embarrassed of living in this place. Anyway, they made enough of a stink that the board relented and they sent out an apology. And I guess today a family of evacuees moved in for however long they need to be there. So you can, if you stick it out, you stick together, and, you know, you don't have to take it. It is your home. It is your community. You do have a say in what happens there. Stand tall. But can you imagine the arrogance of the board sending out a notice saying that our laws prohibit additional families in the homes?
Well, I wouldn't have until after I started talking to you.
you know, these people are just unbelievable. And the thing is that there was nothing in the covenants that prohibited that. They just sort of took great liberties with, you know, with interpreting the governing documents. The governing documents, from what I understand, said these are single-family homes, period.
You know, you're talking about all this, these documents and paperwork. Where can people find this should they be out, you know, shopping for a home?
Well, if you're shopping for a home, you know, make sure you ask whether there's an association. Ask to review the governing documents. The governing documents, most states have laws that require the seller to provide you with the documents before you settle. Make sure you get them in plenty of time. Also, many states have laws that give you the right to cancel a contract should you decide you don't want, you know, you don't want to proceed with the sale if there's anything in the documents that you don't like. The other thing, too, is the covenants run with the land, and they're recorded in the land records in the jurisdiction that you live in. So if you're buying a house, go to the courthouse and find out if there is anything recorded against your land, against the house you're planning on buying.
Have you heard of anyone trying to get rid of those covenants? And
yeah, a lot of people. In fact, where you have associations without any major common areas, a lot of associations have just sort of just ignored them and they've gone defunct. In fact, a few years ago, I got a call from a city employee in Florida in some city asking for advice. It was right after 911, asking for advice on how to get people reinterested in starting up their associations. It seems he had a lot of associations in the town where the homeowners stopped collecting dues, they stopped electing boards, they didn't have board members, they didn't do anything. And I said, well, why do you want them? Oh, well, because they're good. I said, good for what? He says, well, I'm going around with flyers telling people that they need to restart their association, rejuvenate their associations, because it's going to protect them from terrorist attacks.
Well, I know here in the Bay Area that there are many municipalities who are promoting, you know, that are their smart growth communities, and they're promoting homeowners associations.
Oh, they're mandating them, yeah. Yeah. They mean, if you're a developer and you go in and you start, you know, asking for permits to develop a property, you won't get those permits unless there's an association to take care of it.
Wow.
You know, it's just not going to happen. So if you guys, if anybody listening to the show today owns a house that is not part of an association, you can record a covenant as well. Just go to the courthouse. It's going to cost you, I don't know, $10, $20 for a recording fee, and just say that this property will never be become part of a mandatory membership association.
Well, we got about 45 seconds here. Tell us a little bit about your show and how we can catch it on the Internet.
On the Internet, it's onthecommons.com, and it's I do it every Saturday, 1 hour, and we talk about homeowner associations. I've kind of expanded it a little bit. We've been talking a little more about property rights, especially since the Freedom 21 conference in Reno covered eminent domain, and you know, I've covered other issues relating to property rights. But again, it's always from the individual's point of view.
Well, we want to thank you for all the work you're doing, and thank you for staying up late and being with us on the Freedom 21 radio program. And we'll be talking to you soon.
My pleasure.
We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 radio program. In this next half hour, we're going to kind of follow up on what Michael Shaw was talking about earlier, about education and what's going on in our schools and what's not going on in our schools. And our guest is Julie Quist. She's a board member at EdWatch, and if you listen to this show very often, you might have heard Michael Chapman on here, but Julie has been nice enough to join us this evening. Welcome, Julie.
Yes, it's nice to be here.
You know, you guys do you know, of all the things that we talk about, you know, on Freedom 21 Radio, I think one of the most important ones is how our kids and our education system is being manipulated. Michael, earlier on in the first hour, had a great show talking about, you know, the manipulation and, you know, the agendas in today's public education system. First, and I don't know if how familiar you are, but Michael Chapman came on here one time and defined what originally the intent of an education was. Could you tell our listeners what our school system was originally intended to do?
Sure. We often refer to it as a liberal arts education, and the reason it's called liberal arts is because it's a education for a free people. You don't teach people who aren't free more than they need to know. You save the expansive knowledge for, you know, the princes and the princesses and who will become the lead, the kings and the queens. In other words, in our type of government, the people are the kings and queens. We are the ones who are, we are the people. We run our government. We make the decisions. We run for our legislators. We make the decisions in our communities. And a free people need to know a lot about the world and how it operates. And so you're not just training people for a job. You're not just preparing them for a vocation. You're preparing them to be citizens in the fullest sense of the word, and parents of children who will also be trained to be free. So it's education for free people. And that's what we've lost track of in our education system today. Everything has to be functional, useful for exactly what we decide we might need it for. Don't learn anything that you can't figure out what you're going to need it for, and have lost sight of how much we need to know and understand about our world in order to be able to really govern ourselves.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about September 17th, Constitution Day, or undermining the Constitution. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 radio program. We're talking to Julie Quist from EdWatch. It's, you know, I was so glad that we were able to get you here. You know, I worked with you, I signed up for your alerts, so now I get them regularly, and they're just great stuff. And recently I got the one September 17th, Constitution Day, or undermining the Constitution Day, and it's just very appropriate to have you talk about that. Please.
Well, thank you. As people probably have heard, that the federal government has a new mandate, and that is that that schools that receive any federal funding, and that is K through 12 plus post-secondary schools, must have must teach about the Constitution on September 17th. And that was slipped into a final appropriations bill at the end of a special session in 2004. It was late December. Everybody wanted to get home, and it was Senator Robert Byrd from West Virginia who just added this to the final bill, and who could oppose it?
I mean, it sounds like a great thing.
And we all love the Constitution.
Right.
So everybody voted for it. Well, of course, the federal government does not have any constitutional right to tell states what they should teach. And so it's unconstitutional in the strictest sense of the word.
Wow.
And the thing is that, people thought, well, how could they vote against it? Well, not surprising when you look back at it. I mean, we've really been had. The left was all prepared with curriculum and websites and everything. They had the inside track on this, and of course, some people knew this was coming, obviously. But you have the Center for Civic Education with all kinds of curriculum all ready to go on Constitution Day. If anybody knows who the CCE or the Center for Civic Education is out of California.
Uh-huh. Are they out in Berkeley by any chance?
Well, they started around that area, but it's Calabasas, California.
Yeah.
They're the authors of the federal curriculum, which is We the People, the Citizen, and the Constitution. It's a federal curriculum because the federal government has authorized them.
And all of our kids have that book, We the People.
Your kids do?
Well, yes.
Okay. Okay, well, we have a book on that. My husband wrote a book called Fed Ed, The New Federal Curriculum and How It's Enforced. And we also have a booklet called The Textbook Review of We the People, The Citizen and the Constitution. 15 pages. We sell it on our website on our shopping cart for $5, including shipping. But it's really valuable because this kind of material is all targeted at the patriotic middle class. It's the unsuspecting patriots out there who think that they're doing something to teach their kids the truth about the Constitution. It's all got a veneer of traditional patriotism, and it's nothing of the sort. It's really a huge step toward teaching the kids about world government and that the UN Declaration of Human Rights is superior to the U.S. Bill of Rights. That's what the CCE is. It's a scam, basically. And so here we have the CCE with a curriculum all ready to go for Constitution Day. Other organizations, same thing. You have a group called the Bill of Rights Institute, which is targeted, again, at conservative, middle-class patriots, basically. And it sounds really good until you look at their real material, and they are pushing a very radical understanding of the Constitution. The Ninth Amendment, they say, is basically wide open for the Supreme Court justices to determine what are the unenumerated rights that belong in the Constitution. So everything becomes constitutional, and every right, you have all these new rights that become rights just because the Supreme Court justices say that they belong in the Ninth Amendment as unenumerated rights. Then you have a program that's coming up this Friday that's being promoted on the internet. It's Justices Sandra Day O'Connor and Stephen Breyer, and they have a curriculum to meet Constitution Day, an online discussion of the Constitution. Now I don't know what that's going to be because that's not available till Friday, but you know, it's really neither here nor there because what this is setting up sooner or later is something that that raises some real red flags. I'll tell you, it's sponsored by a group called Justice Learning. And Justice Learning is the product of the New York Times and the National Public Radio. Okay? Does that tell you something about where we're headed here?
Social justice agenda.
Yeah, right. Justice Learning, social justice agenda. You know, it's transparent. Once you see who's doing this and the kind of information they're putting out, but it all on the surface just sounds like such a good thing. In fact, it's being promoted as a necessary to defend our country, because if our kids don't understand about the Constitution, how are we going to maintain our freedom?
Well, you know, and that's what we're learning. The more we learn, the more we find out it's really how they present it and change the meanings of words and do a lot, whether it's in the environment or whether it's in smart growth or whether it's, you know, learning about the Constitution.
Exactly. And I have to say, the thing that's most striking about this is this doesn't have leftist sounding sloganism. It sounds like it comes right out of, you know, something you or I or our friends would write. So the language has a veneer of what we would identify with.
Oh yeah, well we always talk about that. You know, it's not really kind of either left or right, because when you really look into who's involved, it's both sides.
Yeah, right. And of course, you know, the Republicans voted for the Constitution Day every bit as much as the Democrats.
There you go.
Maybe more.
You're right.
Because it sounded, you know, it sounded good. But you have to look at what the agenda is, and, you know, and they should be asking, is this the right thing to do, whether it sounds good or not? It's not. But that's what we have. We have, in fact, now I just, you know, I've been, the more you look, the more you find, and apparently the CCE agenda is being, or curriculum for Constitution Day, is being promoted by C-SPAN now. C-SPAN has got on the bandwagon of teaching civics,
mm-hmm.
not just for this day, but they are promoting a whole civics program, and guess who, whose program they're using? It's the Center for Civic Education. It is the radical curriculum that is actually funded with our tax dollars.
Oh, and I bet it's funded from all kinds of very interesting places.
But you know, in the education bill that was passed in 1994, the CCE was specifically given in law, right straight out in the law, not as an administrative grant, but right in the law it said the Center for Civic Education shall write the national standards on civics and government. They shall, you know, write and distribute a curriculum on civics, and they will do it with federal money. Never came back to elected officials for review. They were given carte blanche to do what they wanted to do with it. And so they wrote the standards, they wrote the curriculum, they got money to promote it all over the country. On top of that, the CCE was given the government contract, you know, behind the scenes now, to write the national the framework for the national assessment on civics. So that's called the NAEP, the National Assessment for Educational Progress, which is called the Nation's Report Card. And you know, so they have their hands in the bag everywhere you look. And the National Education Association just came through with a promotion where they are also promoting the CCE's civics agenda for the school. So all you have to do, they say, click right here, and you have all the curriculum you want on civics and government.
Well, you know, you said something earlier that perked something in me. That notice how it's an assessment. It's not a test to, you know, figure out what you learned. It's an assessment to see how much you've changed towards that thinking.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, a test implies that you're learning something objective that is either right or wrong. Mm-hmm. You either know it or you don't. An assessment is something a lot more vague, and you're not, it's not necessarily knowledge of a subject that you're evaluating, but you're evaluating your progress towards certain dispositions or understandings, a frame of mind, a framework. So they're assessing how you're moving toward your values and attitudes and beliefs, that's the worldview that they're pushing you toward. That is what the core curriculum is these days.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much knowledge of subject areas.
I'm going to guess you're a parent.
Oh, yes.
What is it about Constitution Day and what they're teaching that really upsets you?
Okay, well, that's a really good question. Are we teaching the Constitution, or are we undermining the Constitution? What we find is that some of these curriculum, for example, the Bill of Rights Institute or the CCE, define, instead of inalienable rights, as is stated in the Declaration of Independence and that you find enumerated in the Bill of Rights, you have a sense of evolving rights. So, you know, you don't, the Declaration of Independence talks about self-evident truth. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and among them are, these rights are the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those are the very famous phrases.
Mm-hmm.
In there, you get the idea that there is self-evident truth, and it's so evident that people don't even have to debate it. It's just not debatable.
Right.
And what we teach in this new curriculum is, if there is no truth, there's never any truth, there's just what society, you know, thinks about is important today. You instead of just having inalienable rights and limitations on what government can do, you have what they call positive rights. That is what the government must do. And they may, as in many of the socialist countries, they have positive rights in Cuba and Soviet Union.
It sounds like that's where they're moving us that
way. Really? Yeah. I mean, you know, the housing is a positive right, or the right to have health care, universal health care, or government-sponsored daycare, or, you know, everything in the hands of government is a positive right. And so the government is providing your housing, the government is providing this, the government is providing that.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't matter if you work or you do well or you don't do well or you just sit home, you're just supposed to be able to get whatever.
Right. So what they're teaching about the Constitution, too, is, in these new curriculum, is that there's not just, I mean, there's a proper way to amend the Constitution, and that's with a three-quarter vote of the Senate and the House, and then, the states have to ratify it. That is a legitimate way of amending the Constitution. It's constitutional. The Constitution set it out.
Right.
But what they're teaching is what they call an informal way of amending the Constitution.
Oh, that is scary.
And that, of course, is by fiat from the Supreme Court. And that is an amendment of the Constitution because you've evolved into a certain new understanding, a public consensus of what we believe. And that's literally what they're talking about today, even as they're having the hearings for Justice Roberts, for John Roberts. They keep asking him, you know, do you really believe in original intent, and don't you think that there are, you know, new rights that you would have to defend? And that's really what's at issue in what they're teaching the kids today. That It's not, the Supreme Court defines what the Constitution is. And so when we have Constitution Day, the question that was raised in the alert that we sent out and the update that we sent out was, are they teaching about the Constitution or are they teaching the Constitution? I mean, do they teach that the Constitution is true and what it says is right? Or are they just teaching that it is whatever they want it to be?
You said a couple of things, you know, consensus, and most of the time in our experience, in today's consensus, it's all predetermined. You know, there's a facilitator there who already has a predetermined outcome on what the consensus is going to be, and they just, you know, make people think that they've had input, but they already know the outcome. And I'm guessing when you pose those questions, they're not teaching the Constitution. They're undermining him, just like in your article.
Right. And, of course, I mean, how does the Supreme Court decide what the consensus of the public is? It's sort of a touchy-feely sort of thing, or do they take a poll, or do they go to the international community and say...
I'm guessing if you called up, you know, we always talk about that here, you know, if you went to any of the... Agenda 21 agendas, it would tell you exactly what they're trying to get done.
Yeah, I think you're right. And as you know, the Supreme Court has begun actually deferring to certain international treaties and international standards. And in fact, the CCE actually says in some of its material that... I'll give you a quote here. The CCE defines civic education as teaching, this is a quote, globally accepted and internationally transcendent principles.
There you are.
And another quote from the CCE is that they state that, quote, the most important goal of civic education is to teach democracy globally and internationally. And then I'm going to go on. Education for democracy in a sovereign state such as the United States is a thing of the past that involved, and it's a quote, mind-numbing inculcation of uncontested political loyalty to the state and society. So, you see what...
So,
Yeah, I mean.
And the weird thing is, it keeps coming up. We're going to take a quick break,
okay.
And we'll, you know, spend the last 10 minutes telling people a little bit more. We're right
okay.
Back. Welcome back. We're talking with Julie Quist from EdWatch. You know, and as before we went to the break, and you know, I was saying that I've only been doing these interviews for, oh, I don't know, 6 months or so, but, you know, no matter what topic that we talk about, you know, and education happens to be very dear to my heart because I have children too, we go to that whole, the global citizen, you know, or the global government, or, you know, that whole thing, you know, where they're, you know, they're blurring our rights and they're blurring the borders and, you know, these things are put in by people who, like you said, aren't elected. They create this curriculum, there's some council somewhere that tells them what to do, and they just put it in play.
Right, exactly. You know, it people might be interested in knowing or hearing some guidelines on how do we differentiate legitimate curriculum from the frauds.
Oh, please.
You'd be interested in that?
Oh, please.
Okay. Well, the alert that we sent out indicated that there were basically three different questions that should be answered. The first one is, what is the standard that they're using? You know, that is, how is the meaning of the Constitution being determined? That's one of the questions you have to ask. Is it based on what the Constitution itself says, or is it based on the meaning of the Constitution just on whatever the Supreme Court decides? I mean, what is the basis for deciding what's true? Is it the Constitution itself, or is it just whatever the Supreme Court decides it says at that particular time? Another question that has to be asked is, does the curriculum recognize the importance of our nation's foundational principles as stated in the Declaration of Independence?
That's so key.
You know, our Constitution is based on those Declaration principles, the God-given rights to life, liberty, and property, real truth, national sovereignty, and natural law. And those, if those building blocks are missing, then you know that it's isn't teaching what needs to be taught. Any curriculum that suggests that the Constitution might include a right to abortion or drugs or euthanasia, it's as a foundational principle, it just isn't in the Constitution. It isn't there.
We'll get to that third one right after this. Oh, all right, go ahead.
Okay, and then the unconstitutional agenda of the left would be the third one. How is that treated? For example, is the right to gun ownership by private citizens described as, you know, just what it is in the Second Amendment? Or do they describe things like that as a controversial issue or a matter of gun control? How is the Tenth Amendment treated? Usually in the federal curriculum, they ignore the Tenth Amendment, which limits the power of the federal government. How are those agenda items treated? That tells you what kind of a curriculum it is. After this weekend is over, we will be getting up on our website some examples of good curriculum to teach about the Constitution. And that isn't up there yet, because we're still working on that with Dr. John Eidsmo, who is putting on a presentation here in Minnesota on what should be taught on the Constitution. So look forward to that on edwatch.org. That's our website.
And for the folks that are in the Minnesota area, when is that talk going to be and how can they attend it?
Well, for Minnesota or area around here, we are having that at 7 o'clock on Saturday, this Saturday. It's at Grace Church in Eden Prairie. And it's $15. We have dessert and beverages served. And he'll be speaking on that subject, what should schools teach about the U.S. Constitution. But it's all on our website, edwatch.org, and people can get a lot of this information there now.
Well, you guys do a really great job. And, you know, you sent out another one earlier, and we didn't even get to get into that. It was a Civics Trojan Horse.
That's right. It's Civics Trojan Horse. There's legislation in Congress right now, co-sponsored or co-authored by Senator Lamar Alexander, a Republican, and Senator Ted Kennedy, a Democrat.
But there you are. It comes from both sides.
Right. And it is requiring the states to use the national assessment, the national test, to confirm their own curriculum and to see, you know, to assess how kids in this country are, you know, are complying with that CCE civics curriculum. That's what it amounts to. So that's also online. There's information there about that bill, too.
Where are they on that bill?
Well, it doesn't have a House author yet.
Okay.
It has gone through committee in the Senate. It's ready to be marked up any time, but hasn't been marked up yet. I expect there won't be a lot that happens on it right away, but, you know, that's the kind of bill that they just kind of put it together real fast and flip it through, and they don't have any hearings on it. They put it, what it's called.
And in the middle of the night, it just kind of...
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be in the middle of the night, because what they do is they put it on what's called the consent calendar.
Oh, yeah.
A consent calendar means that it's a non-controversial bill. And if it gets on the consent calendar, that means that it will pass without a recorded vote and with no debate and with no amendments allowed. So, you know, a bill that's on the consent calendar simply does pass. That's it. So you can't get it, the opposition has to be put in place before it gets that far. And we have put out an action alert on that one. And there's, like I said, that is available on our edaction.org website.
Well, I would encourage every parent or anybody that cares about what's going on in the schools to keep a close watch on your website. It's edwatch.com. And we really want to thank you and Michael Chapman and your husband, Alan, for all the wonderful work that you've been doing to let people know what's going on in our public schools, and it's even seeping into some of the other schools.
Yeah, it is. It's because the curriculum is so deceptive, it's actually being used quite widely in private schools and homeschoolers too.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for
being with us tonight.
We really appreciate
you. Well, thank you.
Bye-bye.
And, you know, if you want to hear more about what they're doing, Michael Chapman is also involved with a lot of the work that we're doing here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz program, and he's on several of the pieces that we have out there. Check our website, freedom21santacruz.net, or FS... No, come on, give it to me. What is it? F21SC. Thank you very much, Wyatt. That's going to be it for us this week. Please stay with us regularly, and you have a great week. We'll see you next time.